Välkomna ska ni vara till ytterligare ett frontavsnitt. Och idag ska vi prata med Oleksiy som är frontsoldat i Ukraina.
And then it was in June of 2022, we were sent to Kherson region, oblast, Kherson oblast. It was, quite hot there. And our brigade is like airborne troopers, I think, or air assault brigade. I'm not sure what's the correct translation in English. We don't actually jump from the planes, almost. At least it's completely ineffective in the real war now. So in theory, yeah. So, okay, what's your next question?
Well, so it is an air assault brigade.
Yeah, air assault brigade. Yeah.
Okay, and now we're talking about June 2022.
Yeah. We were sent to Kherson Oblast. Yeah, it's when Kherson was under Russian occupation. And they had a lot of areas in Kherson, occupied in Kherson Oblast beside Kherson City.
What kind of missions did you have at Kherson?
You mean our company?
Yeah.
That's observation... observation spots, or points, there were a few observation spots, and our task was to take as much information about, position and number of enemy, as well as their, armored tanks or artillery or whatever. So any information, it was our work to do. And observation, of course. So we had equipped observation, It was like a dig in the hole that was masked with the leaves, a few branches, and you are staying there for at least 24 hours. You have maybe night vision, maybe binocular, and your ears, your AK-74, and one more person with you, and you get you listen. They worked with artillery very densely. They covered the area like not 24/7 actually, 24/7. It was more or less silent in the night. After 11 in the evening and up to 4 in the morning, more or less silent. But the rest of the time they were covering us with, everything they had, like this alligator helicopter, K-56, right? I don't remember. Okay, it's tanks, phosphorus bombs, cassette bombs, a lot of different bombs that I just, nobody knew what was that, with different effect, like cassette bomb that explodes in the air, and then there is silence, nothing, but in a minute or two, these cassettes, they explode simultaneously, cassettes that are already on the ground. So they're just spread on the ground. Okay, a lot of different interesting experience we all got there. And since we were attacking, we had a lot of casualties, of course. We were crossing the river. On the one bank of the river, it was our territory. On the other bank of the river, there was like a line in a kilometer. Later it became maybe 2 kilometer width, so which was ours, but we were like pushed to this river. We were on a limited territory, so we were quite a good target for them. And I think it was like a couple of months before we were able to push them off a bit a bit from this river.
Before you joined as a scout, I can imagine you had an image of what it would like to be a scout. But what was the biggest difference when you were a scout yourself?
Yeah, well, no one says that scout is the one who is always under fire. I mean, everyone was under fire. As soon as you cross this river, you are in danger zone. So immediately, just. And crossing the river itself is a very dangerous thing to do. A lot of guys never crossed it, after all. Yeah, so scouting was like being accurate, being smart, being, you know, working in a team very much, so to say. So like interconnection, mutual understanding, and it's like the grounds for being a good scout. But in our case, no, it was very different.
Can you tell me a bit about your teammates?
I think I there is a book to write about that. Maybe can you ask more specific question?
Be more specific. Your team consisted of how many members, and what were their ages? And did they have any additional specialty?
I think I was quite old. No, I don't think I was older than 90% of our, you know, our scouts. They were people of different specialties, totally different. So you must understand one thing, that, you know, the army that right now is fighting Russia, it's like people's army. 95% of people are not professional soldiers at all. I think 60-70% of them never served in army in a peaceful time. So it was like regular guys from the street who stood up for, you know, for the idea of their own country. So specialties are very different from like construction workers, you know, musicians, and hotel people from hotel business. There are managers. Just regular people of any profession. Of any profession, absolutely. So they, most of them are younger than me, or were younger than me. And totally it was two platoons that worked together. And, you know, almost from the very beginning, it's a mess. Because what you thought it will be and how you will work together, like it just breaks up immediately.
But as you describe it, I understand that your morale was high, that you were motivated. Very,
yeah, so we were super motivated. You know, you are super motivated. And, okay, so before this all starts, you have the idea of yourself, or how you will act, how you will react in this or that situation. After all, you are people prepare you for this. They tell you what to do. They tell you what kind of situations can be. And you imagine what you will be in this situation. And when you finally appear to be in this situation, it's totally different from what you expected. And very often it's totally different with other people. Okay, you expected from this person something else, but okay, you thought that he is a good warrior, good soldier, but he breaks emotionally, psychologically, and so on. So everything from the first combat that we had and changed. Okay, so expectations changed and your understanding of the war changed. It's not something that you can get prepared to. You can only experience it.
And what was it like the first time you experienced combat? What happened?
Yeah, well, I think it was the first day when we crossed the river and we were going to a spot and drone operator. So we were accompanying a drone operator, me and another guy and drone operator. We're going through the forest. It's Kherson Oblast, so there were forests, luckily. And suddenly this drone operator said, like, get down. I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear anything. But get down on me. So we just fell, and two mines, 80 millimeters, like 6-7 meters from us, they fell on the ground. And the first wish was, okay, let's go back to our trenches. I don't want to go there. So it took me to take a break, like just have a cigarette to calm down. Okay, we have a mission, we have to go on further. You know, it was very close, like just a little bit less of luck and that's it. So, but then you, okay, calm down. We got to do what we got to do. This, something like this. So the first reaction was, I want to go home. Let me. First reaction. But then you get used to the risk, I guess. But then you get used to react correctly to these risks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you have new soldiers who join you, what are the most important things that you teach them?
Watch 360 degrees. So it's from the air. It's it can be mind area. So watch under your legs. Watch, listen in the sky and watch to the sky. And 180 degrees around you. So you must be eyes, ears, and attention. And you must stick to someone who knows, who's already been there. Because it's very often thing that person who has first time out, he gets wounded or killed. This happens very often. For some reason, I don't know, but maybe, well, but it happens. It's very important to have someone experienced by your side and, you know, that this person have authority over new guys. They must listen to him and obey his commands. Even if he's a soldier and the new guy is a sergeant, it doesn't matter.
When you receive new soldiers, are they well trained or have they only had a short training?
No, now they're better trained. Now they're better trained than they used to, but it doesn't always help. The training camp and, you know, people come from I think it was one of the Baltic countries the last time I heard. New guys came from camp there. Then it's in Britain, Germany, Sweden. No, not Sweden. Swedish militaries. I know they trained Ukrainians, but not in Sweden. They come to Britain to train. But basically, it's just about. I don't know, maybe just preparing psychologically that it will be hard. I cannot say, well, the main thing here is you got to be able to dig trenches or just dig a hole for yourself very, very quickly, immediately. You got to be able to handle your weapon very good. And, you know, there are a few basic things you got to know if you go as an infantry. We were not exactly infantry, but, you know, when things got harder in Donetsk Oblast, it was winter 22-23. So our company as well almost become infantry, almost, because we were attacked by Russians. And no, actually our, you know, our functions were not needed. So, yeah, please ask.
Yeah, what are the Russians like as an enemy? Are they well trained, well equipped, well disciplined?
They're very good. They study well on their own mistakes. They are very good in engineering works, so they are building extremely good defensive line. They make those trenches with concrete and iron, so they are almost like, they are very difficult enemy, in spite of, you know, media try to make, at least Ukrainian media try to make them look funny. I think this is disrespectful because they are very good. Not all of them, of course, but in general, they study well. They, for some reason, they find motivation here, but it doesn't matter how, but they are motivated. They are motivated. And they are ready to sacrifice their lives, which is crazy. You know, there are cases when they just, not to surrender, but okay, he, for example, he's already dropped his gun, so he surrenders, he can hold the grenade, for example, somewhere in a hidden place, or he can lay down on the grenade. He's alive, he's okay. But not to surrender, he just blows himself up and tries to blow up a Ukrainian soldier. And this is nuts. This is like Japanese in the Second World War. This is something I cannot understand. And yeah, they're very difficult enemy.
Yeah. Have you experienced Russian soldiers surrendering to you as well?
No. Never.
You mentioned media. What do you, as from your point of view, what are the biggest contrast between the actual truth and what the media has reported, where it's like, this is not correct?
Well, the media shows them very often as in poor, miserable creatures. Like, you know, sometimes they, through the eyes of media, they look like people you need to give shelter and to give food, not to fight with them. So this is so wrong. And this is, well, the total informational policy is wrong because they create a picture that we are just about to win in this war, that everything is almost good, just a little bit, just, you know, a couple of inches, and we are victorious, which is far from being truth. And this is where I disagree totally with informational policy in Ukraine, because I think it's time to say the truth that this war will be long, and it's far from being, we are far from being winners in this war, if it's possible, because I'm not sure it's possible to win this war. we will never conquer Russia. We can only, in the best case, we can only return our territories, which will not stop Russia from, you know, shooting missiles to the Ukrainian cities and just getting prepared for another invasion. So I just, I'm for, you know, people must know the truth. They must get, must be ready for things to happen, bad things to happen.
What kind of equipment and weapons do you need in order to be able to continue this war?
Aviation and, of course, artillery. Artillery is never enough.
So you need fighters.
Maybe a couple of hundred thousand soldiers also.
Yeah. Is there a shortage of soldiers in Ukraine?
Motivated, yes. There is a problem with motivation. People who came from the beginning, who survived this war, they are losing motivation because they are totally tired. People who haven't joined the army yet, most of them don't want to do that. Most of them. So very often we get people with low motivation. And that is one of the problems, because Russia is obviously ready for a long war. They are ready to sacrifice years and a lot of people, and Russian people, I mean, in this war. And I'm not sure how. I think we'll see. I don't know. Yeah, but motivation, of course, it's fallen. People who spend so many times there, because I personally was wounded in January 23, and now I'm not able to participate in combat actions. So, but I'm still in the army, and right now I'm serving in the battalion of logistics, so like supply battalion. We are in Zaporizhia Oblast, but we are a bit behind. We don't participate in all this. So, but some of the people, you know, they keep on fighting, and they are tired, and we don't have that much human resource as our enemy. Well, it's complicated. It's complicated.
Mm. You mentioned that you were wounded. What happened?
Yeah. I think the most correct translation is automatic grenade system. Maybe you know this.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, so splinters, well, I was wounded in both my legs, and spent some time in the hospital.
Did they provide good care in the hospital?
Yeah, I have no complaints at all. Yeah, it was all free and all... and quite quality, good quality of doctors and care.
Was it also, I understand you had medics that took care of you when you were wounded. Did that work out great as well?
I was lucky because I was losing blood very quickly, and I was losing, you know, I was just about to faint away, right? Faint away.
Yeah, pass out.
But, you know, we used tourniquets, and the evacuation spot was very close, like 500-600 meters, and the guys helped me to get there, and the car came very quickly, evacuation car, and they took me to the primary medical help. I don't know how to call it. Place.
Yeah.
not hospital, but where, like, professional medics give primary help to people who to stop blood and so on and so on, give some medicals. So I was sent there, and they did a great work. Actually, I do very grateful to the people who, you know, who helped me, because it was it was close.
Was it painful when they applied the tourniquet?
I guess I lost a lot of blood. So yeah, it was painful. It was painful after, not when, but after, when, you know, the blood stops circulating, and yeah, it's aching. Yeah, yeah, definitely. But I lost some blood, and a lot of blood. So I think my, you know, I didn't feel the pain that sharp as a healthy person would.
For how long were you at the hospital?
I think like 45 days, approximately. Maybe a little less, but more than a month. Okay, more than a month.
And then you were assigned to a logistical company.
No, I spent 4 months at home because, you know, I have a crushed bone in my feet. I had that metal joint, so it's my legs must have been cured before, because, you know, I couldn't walk without help of, you know, those sticks for the disabled people. I don't know how to call them.
Crutches.
So I spent
crutches. Yeah.
Crutches. Crutches.
Sticks for disabled people. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I used crutches for like almost 2 months before I could walk. And then, like more than a month, I was. I was continuing healing my legs.
Okay, and today, what have you healed properly, or do you have any problems with your injuries?
I have some problems. I cannot run. I cannot jump. So otherwise, I would return to my intelligence company. So I'm, for a soldier, like I'm a bit disabled.
Yeah. I'm going to go back and ask you about your scout, about your experiences as a scout. When you worked as a scout, you said you had some night vision and some binoculars. Were there some type of equipment that you actually missed that we should actually need this?
We always need some night vision equipment and so on, because, well, we use them in extreme situations. They often break. They're often lost, there is always need in things like this. You know, it's just, you know, the mine can land somewhere near, and it can damage this night vision equipment, and that's it. And you need another one and another one, and. Yeah, it's something that is always needed.
Och där pausar vi intervjun med Oleksii, och vi kommer att fortsätta med den intervjun nästa vecka. Vi hörs då. Vill ni komma i kontakt med oss, så kan ni göra det via vår Facebook-sida som heter Fronten. Det är inga problem för er att leta er fram där. Eller också så mejlar ni på vår mejladress, och det är frontenpodcast@gmail.com.